Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus, and I'm in my 20s, which means that when a 2010 New York Times Magazine piece called "What Is It About 20-somethings?" went viral, I was one of its intrigued readers. In this age of Facebook, online slacktivism, poor job prospects, and a pop culture that seems hung up on extended adolescence, something of a national discussion is going on about whether today's young people are in fact increasingly swearing off adult responsibilities and delaying once important milestones in their lives, or whether older generations are merely criticizing young people the way they always have since the term teenager was new and Elvis was on Ed Sullivan. That Times Magazine piece was written by Robin Morantz Hennig, who now collaborates with her daughter, Samantha Hennig, on a longer exploration of modern life for the millennials. Their book is called 20-something, Why Do Young Adults Seem Stuck?, which is published by Hudson Street Press. Samantha Hennig is web editor for the Times Magazine and has previously worked for The New Yorker, Slate, and Newsweek. In pairing with her baby boomer mom, she helps clarify the argument from a young person's standpoint in her book. And I found that we had much in common. We graduated from college a year apart, we work in the media, and have no kids at home or in our daydreams, at least for the moment, which is common among many of our peers. Samantha Hennig, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you.
What brought you together with your mom to write this book?
My mom did. She, after her article came out, there was a lot of interest from book publishers in sort of expanding on the ideas that she began to discuss in the piece. And she's written 8 books before. She sort of thought she was done with book writing, and she said that the only thing that would make this fun enough to be worth it for her would be if we teamed up to do it.
So did you feel like you necessarily had to defend all 20-somethings in your role as the co-author?
No, I didn't, and I'm glad that she didn't put me in that position. Some people who have interviewed me since then have asked me to take on that role of defending all 20-somethings, and I don't really feel comfortable doing that or speaking for all 20-somethings. So I think what was nice about working with my mother is that, you know, we're both journalists, and we're both more comfortable reporting things and interviewing people and sort of telling other people's stories more so than we are just making grand generalizations. So I think whenever I felt uncomfortable doing that, she totally understood.
And your process was to combine the research that's out there right now with a questionnaire that you sent out to 20-somethings. So what exactly were you trying to find out? What's the crux of what you were hoping to learn from those responses and from the research?
A big part of what we focused on is decision making. And because we believed going into it and, you know, what we read back this up, that the 20s are a time of intense decision-making and sort of decision-making unlike any that you've probably experienced up until that point. We're sort of raised with the idea that we should keep all of our options open. And then when you hit your 20s, after you get out of college, suddenly you have to start closing off doors. You can't keep all of your options open anymore. You know, if you want to have a monogamous relationship, then that means choosing just one person. If you want to excel in your career, that means choosing what that career is going to be. And by necessity, that means not going into every other career that's out there. And so we were interested in how people make those decisions, the extent to which they regret the decisions that they make, how they change course, how that can hurt you or help you to change course during your 20s. And so that's what we were looking at with the research and with the questionnaire.
So is there something that this generation of young people is doing that's new?
Well, I think one thing that's new is the timeline has really been pushed back. So that really is different than in my mother's day. People are waiting longer to get married, waiting longer to have their first child, waiting longer to hit a lot of those traditional milestones of adulthood. And another thing that's new is you know, technology and the role that that plays, which in some ways can make the sort of paralysis of decision-making even more intense because you're that much more aware of how many paths there are out there. When you look at your Facebook feed and you see if you're off exploring the world and you see photos of your friend from high school who just had her third child, you know, then that's just making you that much more keenly aware of these other routes that people are taking, and that can make it tough to make decisions.
But you also noticed that there was a lot of similarities between the way today's young people are going through their early adulthood years and the way that their parents and grandparents did. I mean, this is not the first generation to move back in with its parents.
That's definitely true, yes. And we were struck by how similar things are. There are these books that were written about my mother's generation that are saying the exact same things about them, you know, back in the 70s that people say today. Oh, there's, you know, why are they taking so long to grow up? And they're, you know, just staying big kids. And why can't they be adults already? You know, it's all the same sort of like hand-wringing that those boomers are now doing about their kids.
What role does the economy play in the way young people are going about entering adulthood now?
I think that the economy has definitely made things harder. And, you know, some of the research that we looked at in terms of starting salaries shows that it's really hard to catch up if you come in at a lower salary than people a few years older than you, that can hurt you for your entire career. And another thing that is different now is the student loan burden is so much worse now than it was for my mother's generation. Someone in my mother's generation who was working to pay for college could work something like 8 hours a week to pay for their tuition. And now you would have to be working a 40-hour week to pay for college. So it's just, you know, that's a huge difference and makes it so much harder for young people today, because when you're starting off in the workforce and you have these loans hanging over you, then it's that limits the sort of choices that you can make.
What are some of the impacts of delaying the onset of adulthood? I mean, are we seeing that there are influences down the line into your 30s, into your 40s, if you're doing at 27 what you once did at 22? I mean, what kind of impact does that have?
That's a good question. I'm not sure that we've fully seen it play out yet. I mean, one thing that was striking when we were doing the research on, we have one chapter on children, you know, giving birth. And there's a great disparity between what young people today think is possible in terms of the timeline of having kids and what science actually says is likely. So, you know, our biology hasn't changed, and it's still a lot easier to get pregnant and have a healthy baby when you're, you know, 22 than when you're 37. And there definitely have been improvements made, and in vitro fertilization is, you know, much more socially acceptable than it used to be and works better, but it's not quite as foolproof as I think a lot of young people seem to believe when you ask them, you know, what's your plan for having kids? And they say, oh, well, you know, I think I'll get around to that once I'm financially secure and once I've done all this other stuff, you know, when I'm around in my late 30s. And it's not, you can't just snap your fingers and get pregnant in your late 30s. So I think that'll be something that's interesting to see as more of us, you know, get ready to start having families. Is that going to be a problem that people have been waiting so long?
So as we talk about the way the 20s have evolved, how much of this is willful on the part of young people who have longer lists of what they would like to accomplish and things they want to try and career paths that they maybe start and stop? And how much of it is just that we are noticing the way they're going through these steps more?
In terms of the question of how much of it is willful, I mean, that is somewhere where the economy comes into play, too. If there are limited job options when you graduate college and you find yourself taking things just to get by, but it's not really what you want to be doing, and so then you're bouncing around a lot, I wouldn't exactly call that willful because you're responding to, you know, the limitations that are enforced on you. But then there is definitely a willful sense of, you know, I want to be satisfied by my career, and I'm going to move around until I find a career that's satisfying to me. But I that's another thing that I don't think is that new. You know, that was the case for baby boomers, too.
Was there anything that surprised you about the way this relationship between young people in their 20s and some of the older generations, including the baby boomers, are interacting?
Well, I guess one thing that surprised me is just that, you know, if you look at the parents of 20-somethings today, the parents who are kind of freaking out and saying, what's wrong with them? Why can't they get it together? I mean, those same parents, that generation, their parents were saying the same thing about them when they were in their 20s. So I think every time that we saw that reinforced, it just was mostly amusing to us, you know, that you want to just show those passages to these baby boomer parents and say, you know, settle down. This is what people said about you too, and you turned out okay.
What role has social media played in the way this dynamic has played out?
Social media sort of, I mean, for one thing, it just speeds everything up in day-to-day life. It just adds this layer of sort of franticness, which I don't know how much that influences the bigger decisions that we make, but it certainly, you know, in terms of what we observed of people just feeling like there's so many choices and it's so hard to choose just one, I think that social media definitely plays into that sense of being so overwhelmed. Beyond that, I mean, I guess there's also, I don't know if online dating counts as social media, but that's another thing that sort of adds to this feeling that there's like a million, you know, if you look at OkCupid, there's like, you can click for days through all of the options of eligible people in your 5-mile radius. And so that feeling of endless possibilities can add to the paralysis, I think.
So do you think in the end that the millennials, as they're called in your book, will eventually sort of come back to the middle and make the decisions that young people have been making all along and come back to the mean? Or is this truly a changing paradigm for 20-somethings as they become 30-somethings?
I think it might be a little of both. I mean, I do think that there are, you know, those basic milestones of what we consider adulthood, which is, even that is a little tricky because, you know, you can be an adult and never have been married or never have a kid. So to pretend that you have to hit these milestones in order to be an adult is problematic. But I think that those traditional milestones, those are still in place. And I think that even if it's happening a little later, people are still, you know, putting value on those same things, on, you know, settling down, buying a home, getting married, having kids. But I also think that, you know, we're living a long time. People are changing careers a lot more throughout their lives. It's not that crazy to us that you would make a big shift when you're in your, you know, 30s or 40s in terms of career, in terms of, you know, divorce and second marriages. So to some extent, I do think that, you know, that's the way that the full life plays out might still look different. It's not just that it's delayed. I think there might just be more sort of bouncing around all the way through.
Well, I guess we will wait and see in the years to come. We've been speaking with Samantha Henning. She's web editor for Times Magazine and the co-author of 20-something, Why Do Young Adults Seem Stuck? And it's important to note, wrote this book with her mother. The book is published by Hudson Street Press. Samantha, great pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.